PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Our guest today is an NCS PT who received her Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from the University of California, Santa Barbara in 91 and a Master's of Science in PT from the University of the Pacific in 1993. She currently serves as the Executive Director and Lead Physical Therapist at the Challenge Center, a nonprofit organization that provides exceptional neurorehabilitation to seniors and people with disabilities on a sliding scale after their insurance coverage has ended. It continues with specialized assisted fitness services that maintain health and function to keep people in their own homes. She's undergone extensive training in the treatment of neurological disorders, including the certification course in neurodevelopmental treatment. She has extensive experience in all areas of physical therapy for both pediatrics, adults, and has pioneered several innovative approaches to restoring balance and agility in seniors and people with disabilities. Her Challenge Center balance and conditioning class has shown measurable improvements in over 98% of participants. During her time at Challenge Center, she has worked diligently to expand her expertise in neurorehabilitation, disability, exercise, fall prevention, and function in seniors, and long-term treatment of acquired brain injuries and spinal cord injury rehab, just to name a few. Her knowledge and experience have made her sought after as a speaker at a wide variety of meetings and seminars, as well as a guest lecturer at universities, DPT programs, OT programs, and the APTA CSM. Our guest right now on the PT Pintcast is Tiffany Picayune. Tiffany, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Not a bad intro.
Yeah, and a good PR guy that writes great bios.
That's pretty good. Hardest question is always first. Tonight for me, I'm going Sam Adams. We're doing the Rebel Grapefruit IPA. I figured grapefruit is good for the August weather.
All right. My latest has been the Pineapple Sculpin.
And you give your full endorsement?
Yes.
Excellent.
I love it.
Just going off your intro, we got a lot we can talk about. You've been doing this thing that I just became allowed to do and licensed to do, and this is the first time I've actually had an episode since I passed the boards. So I passed the boards. We're both
Yay.
PTs. It's so weird.
Should I be calling you doctor?
That's a bit of a stretch. Let's just call me Jimmy. Let's do that.
Okay. Let's do that.
But so you've been doing this for a long time, and you've really sunk your teeth into some areas of PT, and you can tell you care because you keep learning, and you also keep teaching, and you keep spreading the knowledge. So one thing I wanted to get into is providing PT without time limits. What PT can truly accomplish if given a chance? And I got a little glimpse in my last rotation. I was allowed an hour with any neuro patient, but this was at an outpatient orthopedic clinic. So getting an hour with a patient was almost unheard of.
Yeah. Wow.
So
that's impressive.
What can we do if actually given the amount of time that patients need? So if we weren't under the gun of insurance, and it sounds like Challenge Center, we'll get into that in a little bit, allows you to have a little more time and not be just, you know, shackled by the rules. What can PT do if you're actually given enough time for what the patient actually needs?
Oh my goodness. What can't we do? I mean, you'd be really amazed. I've been amazed over and over and over again. The number of people that have come to us, they all come to us after they've already been discharged from physical therapy someplace else for whatever reason. They plateaued or they hit the cap or whatever. Many of them have been told, well, that's it. That's about as good as you're going to get. Get used to it. Usually blow that right out of the water. It's a very rare time that we don't make a significant functional change with our clients. I'll give you an example. I mean, we have a client, I just saw him yesterday. He's 8 years post brain injury. He got shoved down some stairs on a cruise ship, cracked his head a few times on some metal stairs, couldn't get to port very quickly. So severe, severe brain injury. They had to remove skull caps to allow for the swelling. They told his wife he wouldn't make it through the night, then told him he'd be a vegetable forever. Fast forward 2 years, he came to us unable to sit up, barely speaking, in a tilt and space wheelchair. And when I saw him yesterday, we were working on walking on grass with his eyes closed.
Wow. I have a problem walking on grass with my eyes closed half the time.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. I mean, he came in not talking or sitting, and 2 years later, I walked him up to the podium at our fundraiser, and he gave a speech.
That's fantastic. And that was because you were able to what? What's different? After he was discharged from physical therapy and told, you know, you're good, this is as good as you're going to get, what were you able to do with him in your specific setting? What were you able to provide that he didn't get or wasn't going to get anywhere else?
You know, I think it's two things. One, we aren't limited or shackled, as you said, by insurance regulations. We don't have to go for medically necessary goals. I mean, if I have a stroke client that wants to dance with his wife at his 50th wedding anniversary, we go for it. If somebody wants to walk their daughter down the aisle without their cane, we could do that too. And these wouldn't be considered medically necessary. So therapists in the system, so to speak, really are hamstrung what they can focus on and work on because it has to meet the insurance company's definition, right? So for one, we don't have to hit those marks. So we can provide therapy for as long as the client needs it to maximize their return. We can get into the financials of it, but mostly we fundraise to subsidize everyone's care there so we can offer it on a sliding scale. Two, because nobody pays for this, nobody's doing it, right?
Right, so, and that's why that's sad.
Right. It is sad, but I mean, it is a job. You do have to pay your bills, so I don't blame therapists for not doing something they wouldn't get paid for. However, very few people are actually doing therapy at this stage of the game, and we've got 15, 20 years of experience in this stage of the game, and we can experiment. We don't just have 8 visits, so we've developed a lot of different things. Also, we just have a different approach. My clients will tell you that I frequently say, it's the challenge center, not the easy center.
That's good.
Number one, intensity. Don't tell me you're 80, so you shouldn't have to do this or that. Everybody needs, you need to challenge the person to their limits, and I've yet to find a cutoff age where somebody does not improve.
Yeah, if anything, you need to be challenged more as we age to get the same result.
Right, exactly. But you often see people go, well, it's a senior, so animal walker and be careful and, you know, just tell them to pick up their rugs and they'll be good. All they want to do is sit and watch TV anyways, right?
Right. So I want to make sure I give out the information early and often in terms of finding out more information about Challenge Center. And you can check out the website at challengecenter.org, and there you can find all information about the services and programs and stuff going on there. I'm just looking here. One of the best 90s shows out there was Mad About You, and you've got a fundraiser coming up, and you're talking about fundraising to make this possible because you're going outside the insurance line. So you got Paul Reiser headlining your Challenge Center fundraiser. That's pretty big.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. I'm excited to meet him. You know, one of the few Bennies for running a nonprofit. I get to meet big names, Rich Little.
You get the glad hand. That's
awesome.
Yeah,
so I'm excited to meet him. It's in October 14th, and we always have a great time, an auction and a dinner, and the comedians are always so gracious because they're really basically volunteering to do this.
Absolutely.
And they never disappoint.
So you are located in La Mesa, California. That's where people can find you in the physical form. So how did Challenge Center come about? How would you explain it to either a fundraiser or to another PT about what you guys are able to do and how you're able to do it?
Wow, you know what? I've been trying to work on an elevator speech for Challenge Center for a long time, and I think I found it to be pretty difficult. Let me start with your first question. How did Challenge Center come about? Our founder was Bill Beaudry. He suffered a spinal cord injury during a surgery. Very depressed afterwards, and because of that, couldn't really participate in rehab, didn't really get very far, went home, spent 2 years depressed, and he finally pulled himself out of it, went back to the rehab and said, okay, now I'm ready, help me. And they said, oh, well, no, sorry, that was 2 years ago. We don't do anything for you now. He felt like thrown away or discarded, and well, where can I go? And there was no place to go. So he found a couple of well-meaning gyms where personal trainers or moms of somebody with a spinal cord injury were trying their best to help people, but he saw, you know, people getting injured over and over, legs broken, decided he wanted to start someplace where people can continue their rehab and stay healthy and have access, but with medical supervision. So Challenge Center began. He got some PTs involved. Originally, they just did the exercise part, and it was mostly a gym. And then about 13 years ago, I started there and we added the physical therapy piece, which I think even surprised Bill how much impact it could have. Unbelievable how he started it literally with a cup in front of Walmart in the very beginning.
Small beginnings leading to a giant change. I like that.
Yeah. So the elevator pitch,
Yeah, how would you describe it to another PT?
You know, when I tell another PT, generally it's, you and I both know that these guys could do so much more and you could have gotten so much more done. It's just, you know, sad that people are left essentially dropped where they are. It's no sort of life to just sit in your house and watch TV. You know, the quality of life is so poor for some of these people. They just get told, some of my clients have been told, well, walking's not even a goal for you. We're not even going to try. And those are people that walk around independently now. So I think PTs generally know that people have a lot more potential than they're able to reach. Send them our way because we'd like to finish the job.
Yeah, I think if you're being real about it and you're sitting there with another PT and you, let's say you've both treated the same patient, you know, we could improve this guy to X, but we're handcuffed right now, so we're probably only going to get him to Y, unfortunately. And like you said, you've got to play by these rules a lot of times, but by you, I mean not you guys at Challenge Center, because it sounds like you've found a way around it. But I mean, that's disheartening to hear, especially if the patient thinks they're getting the absolute best care in the world. What they're actually getting is the best care available because of their own insurance plan. And that's sad. I don't even know another word to put it. That's a sad situation. I mean, I understand it's the way of the world, but it can be sad at the same time.
Oh, it's very sad. People come in for their evaluation and, you know, half the time they've been sent to us to just come get an exercise program and basically do their home exercise program at Challenge Center. More often than not, the PT hasn't even said, go do more. You can get better. The light's just out in their eyes and they're just there to, you know, mark time and do whatever. And then we tell them, no way, you've got potential. We can do this. What is it that you want? Well, I want to be able to, you know, stand up. I want to be able to go on something that flushes, whatever their goal is. And you tell them, okay, we'll probably get that done. Just to see them light back up and to see the hope come back, it's amazing.
That sounds a little better than what I think most situations in the current situation with a third-party payer being involved. And I think it's something that most PTs, if they're working with patients, probably good people, they'd want to be able to provide to their patients. But unfortunately, it's the world we live in.
You know, I'll tell you, I think our expectations for people, as we've been restricted on what we can accomplish with them, I think it's almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Expectations go down, you mean?
Our expectations are so low. I mean, you're a new therapist. You've probably never seen what a stroke client can accomplish if they were given a month instead of 3 weeks of therapy. You know, you probably don't know the limits of how far people can go.
I'd be honest with you. Yeah. I'd like to. I'd like to be able to set my expectations and have them surpassed and be blown away and be really, really surprised and shocked and do that over and over again.
Yeah. And most people would. Therapists are generally, I find, very good people who want the best for their client. But if they don't know that it's possible that somebody who can't even sit up at 2 years post can walk 2 years later, you can't hope for something you don't.
We've got to be the one driving the bus. We've got to be the one pushing it. And as you said, challenging. It's not called the Easy Center. It's called the Challenge Center. You've got to be the one pushing it. If you're only pushing to get so far, well, that patient's only going to think that they can only go this far. But if you're pushing even further, and we had the keynote speaker from the next conference, Nick Ballinger, who was a spinal cord injury patient, and he said he had a great PT who knew just how far to push him a little bit further than he thought was possible each session to get the most out of him. And eventually, he went way further than he ever thought he was able to go. But it took that PT to recognize that, to push him there.
Yeah. Applause for that PT.
Absolutely. So how do you guys make it possible? You do it through donations, but I want to get into the nitty-gritty just in case there's somebody out there who has a bright idea and says, you know what, this Challenge Center thing sounds really, really cool. I'm going to get involved. How do you work with the sliding scale? Not a lot of times do we talk about finances and money, but how does it actually work? What's a broad overview?
Generally, we do we do fundraisers. We have one big one every year. You know, that only accounts for maybe 20% of our budget. The rest of the budget, I write a lot of grants. I went to PT school because the career counselor said I wouldn't have to write papers, and pretty much that's what I do now.
You got sucked.
Irony. I'm writing grants all the time, and I'm out talking to people all the time and trying to get the people in city government involved and the local hospitals involved and healthcare districts give us money, and a lot of great foundations in town and all over give us donations. So we've got to find that other $500,000 somewhere.
How does it work on the other end? Now, the patients, the clients that you have coming with you, and are they paying on a sliding scale, or how does that work?
Yeah, they're paying on a sliding scale. So we can cover up to 75% of the cost of their care, and already the cost of care at our facility is very low. At a full price, we only charge $90 an hour for one-on-one physical therapy. So
that's a steal.
It's a steal, yeah. That's a steal just right there. And then if you are fair income client, then you'll pay $22.50 a visit, which for a lot of people these days, that's lower than their copay.
Absolutely.
You know, we have probably the majority of our clients coming and paying $22.50 a visit for an hour with a PT.
And this is typically patients who have exhausted their insurance coverage and are now kind of on their own. And that's where you guys come in.
That's right.
Cool.
That's right. They're almost all exhausted. There's your insurance coverage. Yeah.
All right. So we painted a very broad picture of what Challenge Center is like, but let's get into the nitty gritty. I mean, you've been speaking all over the country, different types of settings, PT programs, OT programs at CSM. I want to get into some specific pathology stuff. You guys at Challenge Center, you say you take patients farther because you view things differently than what we're taught in PT school. Well, I am literally just fresh out of PT school right now. What are you guys looking at differently? What if it's not, let's pick stroke. What if it's not not the stroke.
Right. You know, we have a lot of interns at all the time, and how students come to Challenge Center thinking about movement analysis and gait analysis is basically, well, if I see this impairment, then it's caused by this thing that's happening to the client. So if I see knee hyperextension, it's going to be what? What'd you get taught?
Weak quads.
Weak quads. Okay. And another one I hear all the time is spasticity in the gastroc. Right. And that's pushing their knee back. But both kind of paint the client as sort of a victim of this magical stroke that's happened to them. Rarely do you hear people talk about the client making any sort of choice, much less an intelligent choice. But what if they did? What if it's not tone? What if it's not the weak quads? By the way, it's not the quads. I assure you it is not the quads. And what if they're making a choice that from where they're standing is a smart one? If you're just trying to keep your behind off the floor, they do two things. One, survival tells them never fall forward. You're going to land on your face. You know, you knock your teeth out. You can't eat the buffalo. You're dead. Poke an eye out. You can't hunt the woolly mammoth. You're dead. They'll do anything not to fall forward. So they're always biasing themselves backwards. We see that with seniors, with anybody that's unstable. You can just watch somebody learning to snow ski and you'll see it. Anytime we feel unstable, we bias our way backwards. That's one. And two, they want to seek what we all want, reliable stability. You and I have stability from dynamic control. And for them, they feel like their muscles are wonky and unreliable. But ligaments, now there's your sure bet, right? So if I can just get to those ligaments, I feel safe, I feel secure.
Can hang on them.
And you can hang on them. What if they're choosing to do that and it's not just happening to them? I mean, really, in the long run, it's a bad choice, we know, and it's going to come unlocked and you can't go down hills or stairs or anything like that. But in the very short term of just dragging your body across the room with your quad cane and the PT gym where it's flat, it sort of makes sense, right? So if you view it as a choice, then there's a lot more potential because you can change your choice, right? You can say, well, they're doing that because they're doing A because they lack B. So, well, let's give them B and they'll stop choosing to do A. And that's pretty much what we do and what happens. We use a force use paradigm. I'm sure you've heard of constraint induced therapy.
Correct.
For the upper extremity, right? They put the glove on. Well, you can't just take away one leg and teach people how to walk, right? So we have to use tasks to constrain them and tasks to force them to use their affected side. So simple example, you have them standing there, their left leg is affected, and you put a 4-inch step in front of them and say, okay, step up on that step with your right leg, your unaffected leg. Well, what's going to hold them off the floor while that right foot is in the air?
Yeah.
Their brain has no choice but to talk to that left leg.
Forcing them to do it that way. That's cool.
That's right. And then whatever it is that they're trying to avoid, we want them practicing that with us. And we're, for lack of a better word, forcing them to practice that with us. But we're giving them tasks where they have to use their affected side and they have to use the components of movement that they're trying to avoid and that they lack. And that's the impetus for some of these poor choices that they're making.
Well, that's a cool way of looking at it. I like that. I like how you had led with that, which is you look at things differently. You know, you're not looking at it as if you see this, it must be this. But I think, you know, myself as a fresh PT, someone who just graduated, we need to grab onto something because we haven't had the reps that you've had. You know what I mean? So we tend to grab onto, well, if I see this, it must be this. And now I feel a little more secure because I feel like I know something. But I think the longer I go and longer, you know, other students will go in their career, hopefully we can pick up on things like this and having people like you spread the knowledge and letting us know that it's okay not to know, but we can figure it out and ask is good. good to hear.
Yeah. You know, I would love to hear us start talking about it and having a different conversation, because I think just being taught, well, if you see this, then it's that, you right there, you sort of, your brain just sort of stops. It checks the box because you already got the answer, right? So you're not necessarily looking for more. Maybe you think you've got it. So, but talking about it as a choice, even if you were talking about that in PT school and just looking at it a little bit differently, and then you're going to look for more.
Right.
Right. Then you're going to learn more and find out more and experiment more.
I will give credit to my neuro rehab professor, Dr. Julie Reese. Most of the tests that we took in PT school, just for time's sake and how many people we had to have papers graded and stuff, were, you know, multiple guess or short answer. She made us write short essays, explain. And if you didn't write, if you didn't speak like a PT, you got zero credit on that answer. So she made us think kind of similarly to how you're describing with that is, give me three different things this could be. So there, that one that I memorized, great, that's one. Well, give me two other ones that it could be. And if you could reason your way through that explanation, she'd give you the credit for it. But she'd make you jump through the hoop, which is cool, because when we get in the clinic, it's all hoops, man.
Right. Well, applause to her. That's great. You got to teach people how to learn, right? You got to teach people where to look and how to think. Not teaching people box answers, just like your teacher's doing, and teaching them how to think about things and problem solve and how, where they can look for answers.
Well, let's get to something else. Let's get to a syndrome that I haven't had a ton of experience with, but we've learned about it, but apparently it's not what I think. Let's talk about pusher syndrome. What do you describe pusher syndrome when you have a student come through? It's not what I think. What is it?
I mean, what are you taught that it was?
I was taught they will push toward their affected side. So we'll push toward their affected side and ultimately disrupt their center of mass and lose their balance.
You know, I'll go back to, it's the why. Why are they doing that?
Right. And what I remember is they don't understand vertical. What they think is vertical. So if they were a pilot, their instruments would be telling them that they're level when they're actually not level.
Correct. They have an altered perception of verticality. Exactly. You know, somewhere between 8 and 12 degrees off towards the affected side. And that's, for them, that's straight up and down, you know, and that's the middle. Your brain only knows what your body tells it and right. What it processes, right? So for them, that is the truth. PT shoving them over 10 degrees to the right, to them, feels like what you and I would feel like if somebody took us 10 degrees off of vertical, and they fight for their life, right? They're pushing and shoving right. And wrestling. And the PT's going, get in the middle. And the person's thinking, I am in the middle. You just, you know, a different definition of middle. But then what do you do about that, right?
Right.
So we've been really trying to work on a lot of things there. I used to do pediatrics a lot. And so I thought, well, why don't I ever see adults in swings? We talk about it with kids all the time, how much their sensory system can play into their motor choices, right? And here we have it straight there. The motor output that we're seeing is precisely because of a sensory input issue and a sensory processing issue. Maybe we can address it that way. We actually do have swings, adult size swings. We get clients in there. That's one way. That's not the beginner way we start, but you'd be amazed to see what somebody with a left neglect does when you put them in a swing and swing them side to side. That pendulum motion, I mean, it's really hard when you're up and to the right in that arc to persist in the belief that there is no to the left, right?
Right.
There better be, because where are you headed? And that pendulum, and it gives them their really solid sense of where's the middle, right? You have all that gravitational feedback of where the middle is. We've got a great video of, you know, barely able to take a few steps, putting them in the swing, and they walk across the room because now their middle agrees with gravity, and that works out a whole lot better. So that's just one kind of crazy thing we do that I really haven't seen anybody else do it. If anybody's listening and you know a place where they are putting adults with brain injuries in swings, please call me and let me know, because we're just kind of, no point in everybody inventing the wheel here.
Yeah.
So I'd love to be able to collaborate.
Like to see a paper on that and see the effectiveness.
Yeah. But basically we just try to correct their midline, try to correct their perception of midline. You overcorrect them, you have them reaching. So you recalibrate their midline. Then you try to get them to work with their affected side while they're recalibrated, but it degrades very quickly. So you got to reset their midline again. You got to recalibrate it and then work while it's calibrated. And then you just keep doing that. And you'll find that in the beginning, you've got to recalibrate their midline every 2-3 minutes. Then it's every 10 minutes. And then you find that, you know, hey, I can just do this nice warm up with these lateral pelvic tilts towards their unaffected side. And we've got their midline set for for the rest of the treatment. That's how it goes, and it just resolves.
How'd you get there, though? How'd you get to put an adult in the swing? Where'd that come from?
Oh, I have a crazy imagination, probably.
All right, good. I'd like to hear that.
From in there somewhere. Like I said, I think it came from, you know, why are they doing this? Just asking myself, why are they doing that, making that choice? And I had a lot of great OTs I worked with in my career and taught me a lot about sensory processing dysfunction. And like I said, working in pediatrics, and I've never understood the line that we draw between kids and adults.
I mean, 18, like, right? As soon as you hit 18, you're an adult, everything changes, but does it?
Right. So I'm not sure why people think that. I'm pretty sure same species. I understand that there are some differences, developmental differences, that sort of thing. But if a brain injury can cause a sensory processing disorder at birth, the difference when a brain injury causes a sensory processing disorder when they have a stroke or if they've got a brain injury. So I just started trying some of the same stuff. I mean, I started treating sensory processing problems, not an adult or a pediatric. I was treating their sensory processing problem.
That's cool.
And we just kind of kept going.
I like that. It shows innovation. I think that's what PTs and OTs and speech pathologists do bring to the table, is that we're a one-on-one with that patient so often that we will do the things that we've been taught in school or things we've learned from other therapists, and everyone once in a while, we're just like, I don't know. I don't know what to do next. So let's just grab this ball and this stick right here and let's figure something out. And then all of a sudden, oh, wait, we might have something because I used it with this patient and it worked. Used it with this patient and it worked. I might be onto something. I can use this now functionally with this type of patient.
And we're always doing crazy stuff at Challenge Center. And luckily, all the therapists at Challenge Center have management there that supports manageable risk.
Manageable risk, being, code for
being
creativity.
Being a PT herself, hey, you've got to challenge people, right? And you cannot improve somebody's balance without them risking falling. Yeah. That's just, you can't make omelets without breaking eggs. I don't want to break anybody's eggs, but you have to challenge them and push them. And we train our therapists a lot when they first come to Challenge Center. How do you guard the 250-pound person that you're teaching to go reciprocally up and down stairs without the railing? How do you do that? And how do you facilitate that and make sure everybody's safe? So we don't just have them, you know, having brain injured clients doing somersaults and working on jumping and running without having taught them how to do that safely first. But we really do a lot of crazy stuff. So it's really promoted to have creativity and to try something out of the box. And we see each other treating and build off of each other's ideas. It's a lot of fun.
And that's what originally drew me to PT, just watching what PTs did and were able to do. And it didn't look like I sat behind a desk if I became a PT. So that's what kind of drew me there too. And I don't mind being creative, but I like it. If you want more information about Challenge Center, again, want to throw that website out there, challengecenter.org is where you can find out more. Going to take a quick 60-second break. When we come back, I want to talk to Tiffany about why the manual muscle test needs a makeover. I mean, it's used all the time. It's hammered on us in school. Why it might need to change. Let's talk movement systems and a phrase that sounds a little backwards, but healthy disabled. We'll get into that in 60 seconds in the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
We gotta go pay some student loans. We'll be right back. Physical Therapy Day of Service is October 15th, 2016. Join fellow members of the PT profession around the world in a day of service to our communities. Here is what people who have already pledged have to say.
My name is Kelsey Miller, and I'm a third-year PT student at Mayo School of Health Sciences in Rochester, Minnesota. I decided to take part in PT Day of Service because of my passion for people and the global community. I think it says a lot about our profession to have a day designated to giving back to our community and to do so with our colleagues from around the world. My idea is for PT Day of Service on October 15th. As a local ambassador, I want to spread the word to other physical therapy professionals that this event exists. I really want to encourage others to be a part of this incredible PT Day of Service.
Pledge your support for the physical therapy profession online at ptdayofservice.com. PT Day of Service, October 15th.
PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. 6-week online review courses with live webinars, personal attention from instructors through email, phone, or Skype, and practice tests. Choose from their Mastermind Study Group or the NPTE Home Study Bundle. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
And we're back on the PT Pintcast. We're talking about something a little bit different with Tiffany Picayu. Challenge Center, again, want to throw that website out there, challengecenter.org. And if you are in the La Mesa, California area, you can attend their fundraiser, which would be pretty cool. Paul Reiser from Mad About You, Friday, October 14th at the Dana Mission on Mission Bay. And you can check out more information about that with their 19th annual comedy night to fundraise for Challenge Center. So in all your time at Challenge Center, what's a memory or two that stick out to you? I know we're not ever supposed to have favorite patients, but sometimes we have memorable ones, right?
Oh, my God. The moment that got me the most, you know, I had a young guy. He had a spinal cord injury, but he had a central spinal cord injury, which was just really interesting just to learn about that in the first place. So his upper extremities were affected more than his lower extremities. But in his case, he was 16 or 17 when he was injured. So he actually got a lot of therapy. He wasn't a case of, oh, poor guy only got 4 weeks and was sent on his way. He got like a year of therapy. He was 16 or 17 when he got injured in a bike accident. The frustrating part was is that, you know, at the beginning of outpatient therapy, his dad would pick him up and lay him basically on this bilateral platform walker with bilateral solid ankle AFOs, and he'd kind of pedal it, for lack of a better word, 5 feet. And by the end of the year, his dad would have to pick him up and lay him on this walker, and he could pedal 500 feet. And that's what he accomplished, probably because that's what was considered medically necessary. But I ask you, what could possibly be the point of being able to walk 500 feet if you can't get up to the walker?
Right, yeah.
If you can't go sit to stand. He couldn't transfer by himself. He couldn't stand by himself. He couldn't go sit to stand. He couldn't roll over in bed. I just felt like, wow, that's a lot of fish not to fry. So, and he was discharged from physical therapy. So he was actually pretty mad at physical therapists as a profession. Felt, I don't know, betrayed or
jilted,
just, you know,
slighted.
Jilted, slighted, because he felt they gave up on him. So he wouldn't even actually talk to me for the first 2 months he came to Challenge Center. He and his dad were going to exercise themselves, and they were going to get this done. And PTs, no, we're not trusting you guys anymore. So I finally, I mean, I really had to talk him into just letting me try. So you just let me try. Let me just see if we can get anything, if I can contribute anything. So he's like, fine. And I said, okay, well, what is it that you, what are you trying to do? What's the goal? He says, well, I'm going to walk across the stage at my graduation to get my diploma. Okay, that's fine. So what are you, like a junior? No, I'm a senior. Okay. And graduation is like when? Like 6-7 months away? 4 months away. So I'm going, oh my God. I mean, This is like February. The kid's graduating at the end of May. I've really talked him into it, right? And I've really kind of stuck my foot into it, sort of making these big promises. And now he's got this huge goal that sounds really impossible, and I'm going, oh no. But now I've stuck it out there, so now I had to do it. So I tell you what, there was so much potential left on the table with this kid, and I'm not exaggerating to say that 45 minutes later, I had him go and sit to stand independently.
Wow.
And he was standing independently 45 minutes later. That's what he was capable of all along. I mean, I didn't fix his spinal cord injury, right? He had that capability all along and just untapped, because they weren't trying to teach him normal movement. They were trying to teach him how to be really good at being a spinal cord injured client. And he just needed to be taught how to turn off his gastrocs and, you know, how to go for normal movement, sit to stand. And there he went. One of the great moments of my career was watching him walk across the stage and get his diploma.
I like what you just had said there. That's an amazing story, but I like how you put that. They weren't teaching him normal movement. They were teaching him how to be a spinal cord injury patient.
Yeah.
He already knows how to do that. He is that. You need to teach him how to move again. I don't know why, but I just grabbed onto that. I was like, that's a cool way. I've never heard it described that way. That's a cool story. And that's fantastic. You got to actually get that much out of him. Even after he had a bad PT experience, he was able to buy in.
Right. So 4 months later, he was walking by himself. It wasn't very far, but I tell you what, we kept going with him. You know, when we started with him, he was looking at spending the rest of his life living with his dad, right?
Right.
He couldn't do anything for himself. The most he could do was, of course, he could text with his pinky because he's a teenager. But he could drive his power chair and text, and that was it. He couldn't even scratch his own head. So, you know, it took a while, but eventually got him to the point he was able to move out, live with his girlfriend. And he tricked me by asking me to teach him bed mobility, tricked me into teaching him a few things. And 10 months later, they named her Aubrey.
I thought that's where this was going. So bed mobility can have a couple of different meanings.
Yeah, you would think I would have seen that coming, and I just did it. So, you know, so now he's got this beautiful little girl. He can't live completely on his own, but he can live with his girlfriend, his, you know, very beautiful girlfriend, as a matter of fact, and instead of his not as beautiful dad. So,
well, I bet you he thanks you for that.
I mean, the quality of life difference there, you know.
Yeah, but where would he have been? Where would he have been if not he had decided to put his faith in you and give it a shot?
He's living with his not as beautiful dad.
Right. Bed mobility would mean something not as fun.
He didn't have it. He couldn't even roll over. Isn't that crazy? I mean, you would think in a year you'd teach a guy to roll over.
Yeah, but you got to look at it from a different viewpoint. So let's look at this phrase from a different viewpoint. Healthy, disabled. You say it's not an oxymoron. What's that mean?
Yeah, I just think we often talk about it that way, and I think it's getting better. We use language a whole lot differently and people first language, and I think it's coming around to being more understandable for people that having your function limited is not the same thing as your health limited.
Okay.
You could be somebody with cerebral palsy and be in great health, right? You've got great cardiac function, you got great lung function, you know, you are healthy. And that's just, I don't think everyone thinks about it that way with disabled people. They don't have the access, really, to be pursuing good health, right? The jury is not out anymore. The jury's in and diet and exercise, right?
Right.
I mean, exercise is a major portion, but if you're in a chair, then you can't just go rolling into 24-hour fitness and work out.
Right.
You're not going to go for a jog on the beach. If you're 80 and you have MS, you're not going to feel really super comfortable down at the gym with all the spandex 24-year-olds. I don't even like to go there. So, and funny enough, this is a concept I have to explain to some disabled people. I have to say, you know, cerebral palsy does not give you superpowers. You still could get cardiac disease.
Yeah.
You can still have poor cholesterol. You have to exercise too. Your body is no different than anybody else's body, and you don't get a free pass just because you already have a disability. So you're going to have, if you want to be healthy, you're going to have to do something.
Yeah, need to pay attention to all the things that that everybody needs to pay attention to. Just because you have one doesn't exclude you from another.
Right. So we have a gym at Challenge Center that we really accessible. We have all sorts of great equipment. We have trainers specially trained to help people work out with disabilities. No matter how severe the disability is, we have a way you can work out. I mean, we have CFES bikes, computerized functional electrical stim bikes.
Yeah.
We can get event-reliant quad exercising. We can get anybody exercising, and everybody needs to. People with disabilities need some support, and they need people with some you know, expertise in the area to do it safely and to do it effectively. The sit and wiggle classes, quote unquote, fall prevention classes, where they're, you know, they sit down and kick their legs and their arms, that's not getting you into a training heart rate usually, right?
That's not building strength.
Right. And it's not really usually building strength. It's really not working on your balance. But anyways, we try to get them in there, and we have the PT prescribes an exercise program for them, and we have trainers that we've trained to help them carry out the exercise program. And that, too, is on a sliding scale.
In your intro, we mentioned that your Challenge Center balance and conditioning class, since we're talking about balance, has shown a measurable improvement in over 98% of participants. What are you doing that I'm not doing? Because 98 is a pretty good average.
Yeah, it's a great average. If you want to know what the outcome measure is, it's the 10-meter walk test. So we're looking at gait velocity.
Wow.
You know, clinically significant change in their gait velocity. What are we doing? Again, we're challenging them.
You're not teaching them how to be a spinal cord injury patient. You're not teaching them, you're teaching them how to walk faster. I'm simplifying it, but is that what you're doing?
You know, we're trying to address everything that has to do with balance.
Okay.
And again, you know, we said, well, you can't improve your balance without challenging it, right? You can't make your You can't make your biceps stronger without doing curls with a bigger weight, right?
Right.
Your body's a demand system. So, but it's not really safe to have a group exercise program, have everybody trying to stand on one foot, right? So in this balance conditioning class, obviously there's a flexibility piece, a cardio piece, a strengthening piece, but then every client at every class gets time one-on-one with a trainer to do a really high level, a really high challenge balance activity. I mean, we've got these guys, most of them are seniors or stroke survivors. And I mean, we've got them on balance discs. We've got them walking balance beams and picking up cones at the same time. We have them standing on Dynadiscs and doing curls and really challenging and pushing the envelope of their balance.
And then when you put them on the 10-meter walk test, you're seeing improvements, and it's not a little bit of improvement. You're batting 98.
Right, exactly.
That's pretty good. I like that. I like the fact that that's in your name. You didn't go over the top with the name. You literally said what we're going to do. It's called Challenge Center. We will challenge you. Prepare to be challenged. And more info, again, at challengecenter.org. One other thing I alluded to before the break. Why does the manual muscle test need a makeover?
I suspect I might annoy a few people with this one.
Good. That's the best kind of conversation. But that's the only way we progress. If you don't challenge, to quote you, if you don't challenge, you don't get any better.
Okay, fair point. Touche. That's right. If we don't challenge the profession's not going to grow. I like it. I think just looking at the history of the profession and where we came from and how it developed, World War One, World War Two, it was basically orthopedic injuries, right? People with brain injuries in those days didn't survive. And some of them may have, but was really kind of from an orthopedic standpoint primarily. I think the manual muscle test came from that viewpoint. So we all agree that if somebody isn't strong enough to raise their arm against gravity, what should we do? Well, we should change the physical demand on them, right? And so we do it gravity eliminated. But what about for neurological clients? Shouldn't we also have a way to change the scale incrementally for the neurological demand? Because they don't necessarily have strength problems.
Right.
I have plenty of clients who are much stronger than I am. And the reason they can't walk isn't strength, it's coordination. It's the motor planning. So if we're really going to look at if somebody can move and how they move, I feel like we should have a way to have increments neurologically as well. Also, the manual muscle test kind of starts a little high. It assumes a stable trunk, for one thing. And yeah, there's ways you can modify it. But really, if you want to modify it neurologically on a neurological scale instead of a physical demand scale, the easiest thing neurologically, the first place you're going to see somebody start to move if they've got nothing is in a closed chained, end range, isometric situation. Closed chain is the easiest, it's the most sensory feedback.
Right.
Isometric is the strongest contraction neurologically, orthopedically. End of the range, another way of saying that is within synergy, right? So that's the easiest place, and that's the first place you're going to see movement. So if we really want to see what do they have in that extremity, then I think we need to start adjusting along those lines, closed chain to open chain. So isometric, you're going to see first before eccentric and then concentric, right? And then, so the hardest possible thing, the highest neurological demand is open chain concentric,
right?
Opposite range,
right?
And what's the first thing we say when we walk into the room? Can you lift your arm above your head?
Right.
Lift your arm above your head. Kick your foot up.
Open chain concentric.
And we start with our neurological clients. We start at the high end. We start at a 5 out of 5 neurologically for them, right? And ask for the hardest movement. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people go, oh, they can't lift their arm over their head. Okay, now try to go without gravity. Nope, they're still not doing it. Okay, 0 out of 5. And a 0 out of 5 on your quads means that walking is not a goal for you. But okay, wait, we're supposed to be trying to find the function in there. So, I think we should look at how we can, just like we change physical demand, we should be looking at how we can change incrementally neurological demand.
It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all test. Maybe there needs to be an NMMT, a neurological manual muscle test, and move it in the way, towards the direction of what you're talking about.
I would like to see that. That would be great.
We can name it after you.
That'd be great, except for no one can say my name.
Picky you. I can say it. We're talking about manual muscle testings, and then that moves into the movement system. The importance of a proper movement system diagnosis and determining a patient's primary impairment. We alluded to that in the first segment in terms of it's not just a, you see this, it must be that. You have to get to the why, the cause system. So the importance of having that proper movement system has got to be a big one, especially with the patients that you're working with.
Right. With some of my students, I kind of like to use the analogy. If you went to the doctor and you had a cough and a fever, I think you'd be upset if they said, oh, you have a cough and a fever? Well, here's cough medicine and a fever reducer. Go on home. You'd probably be wondering, well, no, but why do I have a cough and a fever?
It's not normal.
You'd be mad if that doctor didn't check you out for pneumonia and give you antibiotics. And how much better would it have been? I mean, antibiotics, a focused treatment on the actual source of the problem is going to be much more effective, right, than treating the symptoms. We all see it that way with a doctor, but sometimes in PT, I don't think we drill deep enough always. And somebody will go, well, I saw range of motion. I saw range of motion problems and I saw strength problems. Give them strengthening exercises and stretch them.
But why
okay.
were they there?
Yeah, but why? Exactly. Wait a minute. You know, and you, are you looking at the motor control or are you looking at strength? Because it's strength, the way we're testing with the manual muscle test, back to that, we're not actually testing the strength of that muscle. We're testing also bulking that in with, can your brain tell that muscle to go and recruit that muscle and de-recruit its antagonist? You know, can that happen? You're lumping that all into one test, coming up with, well, they're weak, so I need to strengthen them. It's almost never strength. Think about it this way. Somebody has a stroke. 5 minutes after they have the stroke, their muscles are as strong as they were 5 minutes before, right. And they can't walk.
Right.
If it was strength, if giving their muscles strength was the solution, how come 5 minutes after they have the stroke, they can't walk? Because it's not the problem. Strength isn't the issue. It's the motor control that's the issue. So you need to be looking at the motor control, the movement analysis. What's the movement component that they're missing? Are they achieving this phase of gait? Well, why not? Are they? And get down to that primary impairment. What's the biggest fish to fry here that's going to get us the most result? And treat that pneumonia. Treat that primary impairment. You're going to get a lot further. Your client's going to change a lot more than if you, you know, treat their symptoms.
Yeah, treat the why, not the what.
Yeah.
I like that. All right, so every episode is a pint. But before we're done with the pint, we do shots. And we call them parting shots of wisdom. So if you had one parting shot of wisdom, since this is officially the first episode I've recorded since becoming a PT, going towards my career, going forward in my career, what's some sort of advice that you give to students or new grads that we can take with us?
I think you got to drill deeper. You got to drill deeper and look for the why. Look for really the root cause of all this. And you can't assume a stable trunk. You got to check these things out and drill a little deeper. And two, what would you want if it was your mom?
I want the absolute best.
If it was your mom, would you be okay with transferring in and out of bed and sitting in a wheelchair? Would that be enough? Would that be okay? Then it shouldn't be okay.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. Because of course not. Of course you'd want more.
Right. And aim for that. And I guess, I'm going to go triple shot.
All right.
I'm going to go triple shot. Sorry. I'm not saying normal movement we should shoot for normal movement because it's prettier. There's a reason we all move this way. There's a reason everybody walks this way because it's the most efficient way to get across this planet of ours. Everybody that walked differently than that died out long ago, right? There's a reason we walk this way. It's not just the prettiest. It's the most functional. It's the safest. Normal movement is safer. Dynamic control, you don't use a walker, right? Why? Because you have dynamic control around all of your joints, right? You know, well, I'm going to give this elderly person a walker because that for safety reasons. Well, wouldn't they be even safer if you taught them normal movement and dynamic control about their joints? I mean, what about that? Right. And you don't need to teach somebody compensations, really. They'll figure that out quick. You know, I used to frustrate the discharge planners at the acute rehab hospital I worked at because I would teach my patients to walk with a pole, so they'd have to be upright. And I would refuse to give them the walker, right? But I wanted them to have upright control that came from their trunk, not their scapular muscles, right? And then once they have that upright control, when they walk into the kitchen, then they can let go of their assisted device and reach up for a cup so they can get a drink of water. They can stand at the sink and brush their teeth, whatever. There's a million reasons why you need to be able to stand up and open the underwear drawer and get your underwear out. I mean, that's something we do every day. I think we all agree that's pretty important. But I'm teaching them upright control because that's normal and because trunk control should come from your trunk. And trust me, once they said, no, that, you know, they really need to go now, it didn't take me more than 5 minutes with any one of my clients. You just hand them a walker and they'll walk away.
They'll figure
if somebody
it out.
Can run a mile, they can walk a block. If somebody can walk with a tall pole, trust me, they can walk with a walker. You don't need to teach them how to walk with a walker.
And that feels like more exactly what we're talking about, which is challenging someone, making it a little more difficult so they get more function out of it.
Exactly.
Check out more information about the center that Tiffany works with, challengecenter.org. It is located in La Mesa, California. And if you are in the area and you want to hear Not a Good Comedy, help out the Challenge Center, check out Paul Reiser, Friday, October 14th. At the Dana on Mission Bay for the Challenge Center 19th Annual Comedy Night to help them out. So, Tiffany, hell of an episode. I enjoyed hearing everything about this. I appreciate your time.
Oh, well, thank you for for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.